For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Friday afternoon, taking into the weekend. You kind of had a feeling about 24 hours ago that a lot of people had checked out and they're already into their Labor Day weekend. It's funny.
For sure.
From my perspective, you probably get this too, Sue. You know, we get a lot of pitches in our Odyssey email from, you know, PR people out there. And Holly weekends, they just slow down. You know,
yeah, there's not a
lot getting pitched here as we. And I do enjoy the holiday weekends like this. We've got a 3-day weekend. We'll be back, of course, on Tuesday. But having said that, and we knew this, I think we've been talking about it all summer. It feels like Memorial Day was just here, right?
Yeah, it really does.
We are just blasting through this year. We have a couple of things coming up, including Scott Moorfield on politics that we'll get to. We're going to talk about a music festival called Music at the Intersection as well. I meant to bring this up in the 4 o'clock hour. Did you hear anything about this Wells Fargo employee?
I don't think so.
Okay, this is one of those bizarre stories, all right? This is from the Washington Post. And this happened in Tempe, Arizona, though. A Wells Fargo employee was found dead in her cubicle.
What?
It gets better. 4 days after clocking in to her office in Tempe, Arizona. Yesterday, the Tempe police confirmed in an email that the woman was found dead. There were no preliminary sounds of foul play. Denise Prudhomme is her name. She's 60. She was pronounced dead on Tuesday. She had scanned into work last Friday, and she had not scanned out or in. Since then, they found her body after responding to a call from on-site security who said that they believed that she was dead in a cubicle located on the third floor of the building. The cause of death not known, but how weird is that? I'm guessing
4 days.
Yeah. They don't really say, because what's the obvious question?
Friday to Monday.
Well, but what about her coworkers, right? There's nothing in this story. It's actually a pretty short story. It doesn't really indicate, you know, why nobody else found her. Wells Fargo just said, we're deeply saddened by the loss of our colleague. But that's kind of like 4 days. That seems like...
Well, I was trying to do the math. If it happened on a Friday and then nobody saw her Saturday, Sunday, and then the fourth day would be Monday. And then that's the only way this could happen, right? Nobody's working next door to this.
I would have
occurrence.
To think that there's a lot of remote workers, and maybe she was just tucked in the back. You can even go, like, if we would walk toward the other side of our building right now, you could have someone in a cubicle and you could walk by and not know that they were there. So that's, especially if there's not a lot of people, which we don't have a ton of people. So anyway, I just thought that was a creepy story.
That
I thought
is crazy.
I'd share a real positive, creepy story as we head into the weekend. My friend Mike Weiss is here. He owns Big Shark Bicycle Company. He puts on a great series of races called the Gateway Cup that have been around for a long time. Mr. Weiss, how are you this afternoon?
Man, Mark, I'm doing good because it doesn't look like it's going to rain.
I know. That is a good thing, right? I knew you were probably keeping your fingers crossed. By the way, how long have you done the Gateway Cup now?
You know, we were talking about that. I don't really know. I think it's 39 years old. I probably put on the last 16 or 17 of them.
Well, in this year, I wanted to point out, because I noticed something. I love the night races tonight are my favorite, Lafayette Square, and I'm going to try to make it down with the family tonight. And yeah, no rain is going to help, but they really are thrilling. And I want you to kind of set up for the listeners what happens at these races. But I heard that you're not doing Benton Park this year, and you're doing something in Florissant.
Yeah, we were really struggling with the Benton Park neighborhood. It was twice the length of the other courses. Really hard on staff, and we were, we loved the neighborhood, we loved the area. It just didn't get quite the level of energy as our other races.
Right.
And we were introduced to Florissant, and they're like got so much stoke. It's yeah. really fun.
Yeah, that's cool.
Cool.
I really saw there was an article in the Post-Dispatch where the guy that kind of pitched it to you was real excited. So then the schedule would be tonight, Lafayette Square, Francis Park tomorrow on the Hill on Sunday. Is that right or not?
That is right.
Okay. What is a criterion in these types of bike races? If people watch maybe the Tour de France, that's a road race that goes over literally thousands of miles. This is a different style of racing. Kind of break it down for people who might not be familiar, Mike.
So, like, the most exciting part of a Tour de France stage is the last 40K,
right.
The last 25, 30 minutes. And so this is that. It's sort of like starting as the plot has already thickened and it just gets crazy. It's also a little bit like NASCAR. So it's a really physical sport. It's really aggressive because it's not so long. You have to ride, 20 hours a week to be this fit. You just have to be really, really powerful.
Well,
so it's just a really American type.
Now there's different kind of set up the different divisions. You have a female division as well. A lot of pros. These are pro racers that are coming in, but some of them are amateurs, right? So there's different categories, as we say.
Yeah. It's like a fight card. We have amateur races that go up to elite, national amateur. And then it's not, like a pro race. It actually is the final for the U.S. pro criterium racing. These are the best road racers in North and South America.
Do you have kids races before every event? Because I know I was down there. I like to go on Sundays to the Hill. And one of my friends, Eduardo Nieuwenhuizen, who's a mutual friend of both of ours, he had his daughter in the race. I was trying to get my daughter to do it this year, but she got a little scared. But you do those tonight and tomorrow and Monday as well, or just on the Hill?
We do it every day. Every day before the pro, we sort of like use it as a way to kind of like reset for the faster races, let their athletes gather. And we have these really fun family sprints where it's like, five age groups from big wheel to 12. And it's like everybody's number one. We have Frankie Andreo, like former Tour de France rider. He's our announcer. And we just let these kids rip.
It's fun. They have a blast.
It's really short.
Now, the thing about these races for me as a fan, and I've gone for many years, and Sue, you've been to these races, it's unbelievable. When you get to that pro division, when you get to Cat 1, and you see how fast these guys are going, especially down the stretch and when there's a sprint finish, it's incredible. And, we should also say sometimes there's crashes, right? You talked about NASCAR. Not unlike NASCAR, you can have crashes and big crashes at the end of one of these races.
Yeah, I had one guy say, like, they're not sure what a bike race is, and then they see these guys going mock Jesus, and it's just
right. Exactly.
Well, you know what? They have the open one, because I'm riding on Sunday. You can just do 31 miles or, 18 or 31. They have, like, a general person bike ride, and that's fun, too.
Is that part of the Gateway Cup? I didn't know that.
I don't know. It's kind of associated.
Yeah, we have recreational stuff. Yeah, okay. We try to have like rides for just the people every day. So there's always a way to sort of be active and then watch the races.
Hey, Mike, I'm old enough to remember when I used to ride a bike.
Yeah, they say you never forget, but I don't know. I haven't seen you in a while.
You know what? I bought two damn bicycles from your shop this spring for my daughter and my wife, and we are riding on the trails. I'm not doing it with the crazy racers anymore, but I am getting out there every once in a while. But great to have you on. Good luck with the races. I'll see you this weekend.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
That's the Gateway Cup kicking off tonight. In fact, they're probably racing right now down in Lafayette Square.
That's so fun.
The night races are a lot of fun, and we'll hopefully no more rain throughout the day or even tomorrow. If we did rain in the morning, I think tomorrow, but
supposed
not
to.
Later on. All right, let's talk some politics here. Sometimes I do lighten it up for a Friday, but there's too much going on. Scott Moorfield back with us. He writes for townhall.com. We have talked presidential politics for the last couple of years. He wasn't a big Trump person. He was more on the DeSantis train like I was, but where are we right now? Scott Moorfield, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's been
Thanks
an interesting couple of months. We haven't spoken in a little while, and I'm curious to catch up a little bit on where you are with all this campaign stuff. First of all, let's start with last night in the interview. What'd you think?
Well, it was everything we expected.
Yes.
I mean, what really strikes me, though, is the mainstream media's reaction to it. So the AP's headline was the interview, Kamala Harris's inaugural sit-down was most notable for seeming ordinary. And they had it. Well, that's quite the headline. So they can't really, it's kind of hard to say, oh, she blasted it out of the park. So it's like, oh, it was notably ordinary. And, of course, CNN says Harris bolsters momentum. They said she bolsters momentum, but leaves gaps on policy details. So even CNN is saying, she was super, super vague on any sort of concrete policy proposals there. So it was pretty bad.
Yeah, I thought it was bad too, although I kind of absorbed it in two different ways. The first way was yesterday when they started, you know, releasing the cuts, and those were very confusing because the first cut that they released was the, you know, the first question, which that was weird too, that the first question is, what are you going to do on your first day in office? Where maybe it should have been, hey, how much were you covering up here in the last few months with the guy that's in the White House right now? So I think if I were doing the questioning, it would have been just a little different, if you know what I mean, Scott. But then I watched.
Oh, none of us will ever be doing the questioning.
Yeah, exactly. But then this morning, I thought, you know what? I had seen several of the clips last night. I was watching Mizzou football, to be honest with you, so I did not watch the interview. But this morning, I watched it. I watched the whole thing because I wanted to see how it played out when you watch the whole thing. Two observations on that. I don't think, this is just my observation, I don't think it comes off as awkward when you watch it all at once. When you isolate those clips, it's terrible. But then the thing that was the most comedic for me was her puppet next to her, her running mate, Tim. I mean, he barely said a thing. He just sat there. I don't know why it was necessary to have him in that room, but that was kind of interesting. But no, it was not a good performance. It was, that's what I tweeted out last night. This is the Kamala Harris we know and love when she started giving, you know, word salad answers that don't really make any sense at all.
Yeah, and honestly, I think that the Trump campaign pretty much inoculated them from the possibility of leaning on Walt too much because they kept saying, oh, she's just having Walt to lean on. So, therefore, hardly any questions went to him, right? Like, he barely got to speak, like you said. So, I think that was probably something that they thought, we better not have Walt speak as much as we originally thought, because they're going to really call that out.
But the most important thing, I think, coming out of the interview is what you described just a couple of minutes ago. They kind of went with friendly territory here. Dana asked a couple of questions I thought were on point. There were a couple that I don't really understand why she had to ask right away, if she would have a Republican in the administration. It wasn't a terrible job by Dana Bash, but I did think it was a terrible job on the part of Kamala Harris. But then again, you know, you went through those headlines. That's probably the only thing they matter. They don't really care as long as they kind of got through it. And I would expect nothing else to happen, certainly before the debate.
No, that she did an interview. She can check off that box.
Yeah.
So she's good, right? I'm real looking forward to the debates, aren't you? That's going to be pretty interesting.
I think so, too. Now, one thing I would say is that I don't know if I would underestimate Kamala Harris because she can seemingly put a smile on and fake people out. On the other hand, after last night, I thought if there's any point in question on policy or if Trump even trips her up just a little bit, you can tell, you know, and I watch people very carefully. Maybe you do, Scott, too, when they're on television in moments like this. I like to kind of sense how nervous they are. And you could tell that she's completely uncomfortable. Her eyes look away when she's talking about just normal things that aren't that difficult. She can be engaged, but her brain is moving all over the place and she doesn't really know how to put the words together. It's probably just a nervous reaction, but it's not good sometimes.
Yeah, she's, I just think there's just not a whole lot of experience there, and there's not a whole lot. She's not stupid. You don't become a prosecutor by being stupid. But
you would
I also
think.
Think that, yeah, you
right?
would think, okay, you become one by, in a lot of cases, being a bad person, but you don't necessarily become one by being stupid. But I think that in her case, I think that they know that their policies are really, really bad, and they know that, I think in the back of somebody's mind that is trying to defend a policy that's not really defendable in a lot of ways, especially if you're going to be asked questions about it, you're going to be double thinking yourself, like, how do I put this? Or should I say this? And just really very hesitant. And you could see, I mean, you can't just go out there and just be bold about it because you're going to be ripped apart on a lot of things.
Yeah, that's,
so you have to be careful.
And you can see the caution. Scott Moorfield is here. He writes for Town Hall. So, you know, I mentioned at the beginning, we haven't caught up in a while. We were both kind of in the camp, certainly a year ago, that thought that Ron DeSantis might be able to take this job on. And, you know, we were also very concerned about the negatives that Trump brought to the potential ticket. And obviously, a lot has happened since then. And you and I haven't even talked since the assassination attempt. So it was one thing when he was running against Joe Biden, which looked like he would steamroll Biden. But obviously, maybe a bit of a lack of anticipation that Harris would be the nominee. At this point, you know, the polls are kind of right down the middle. Wall Street Journal has a new poll. Harris up by 1 point. Rasmussen, Trump up by 2 points. Quinnipiac, Harris up by 1 point. But what's interesting about those numbers is you look at 2020, Scott, or 2016, at this time in the cycle, Trump was behind by 6-7 points, even in 2016. So it is a dead heat. Yeah. I don't know where you think the race is going to take us. Obviously, it looks like it might come down to Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I think Pennsylvania is huge, and you're exactly right. Like, when you compare where it is now versus where it was, he's within striking distance. And honestly, like, the Democrats have gone through the honeymoon period, they've gone through the VP selection, and they've gone through the convention, okay? That's the first just bang, 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 like massive blows, okay? And they haven't put Trump away yet. So it's now, you know, they were batting in the bottom of the inning or whatever, and they haven't put him away yet, and it's still tied. And that's what's huge, because right now I think the composite here is 1.8 Harris, and that's all the polls. So you're right. It was, what, this time 4 years ago?
6.9. Yeah, you know, it's 6.9. It's interesting. Yeah. Real Clear is doing this great. Every day they do This Day in History, August 30th, This Day in History. The national polls today, Harris plus 1.8, that's the average. Biden plus 6.9 in 2020, Clinton plus 5.0. And then if you, they also break it down to the battleground. So in Wisconsin, she's got a lead. But both Hillary and Biden had bigger leads. In Pennsylvania, she's barely up. I mean, that's really a dead heat. Biden held a 4.7 lead 4 years ago. 8 years ago, Clinton had a plus 8.0. So, yeah, I would say this is a statistical tie at this point. There's no doubt.
It is. And I hate to say what might have been, because I feel like, I mean, honestly, there's part of me. Like, don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, it was admirable the way he handled the assassination attempt. So as somebody that did not want to see him in this spot, I respect that hugely. And we're both obviously for him now. I feel frustrated in a way, because I feel like if we would have picked anybody else, we would have been up by, you know, 5-10 points by now in this race. But at the same time, it's very winnable for Trump. He could pull it off. That's the best we can ask for. But yeah, I think it's going to come through. If it comes through anything, it's going to be it'll probably be Pennsylvania. I don't think it'll be Wisconsin, and I don't think it'll be Michigan.
No, I agree. I think it comes down to Pennsylvania. You know, I tend to think it's hard because you don't know the scenarios that would exist. There's a lot of support behind this guy because people feel like, you know, he's been wrong. They had all the look. Even someone like me who can get pretty, and our friend John Ziegler, he's not really quite committed to Trump, but he understands, Scott, the anger that's out there with the electorate. And he also understands, and I think we both understand, what's on the line in this election. The Democrats have taken a, hey, we're going to win at all costs path. I don't think that the Trump campaign needs to do that as well. But to your point, would Nikki Haley have, you know, a significant lead right now? I don't know. I think she'd have a lead, certainly, because if it comes down to the economy, and I still think that's the notion that I have, that this is going to still bubble down into economic issues, just like Carville said 25, 30 years ago, because people are hurting. And you got a lot of people that aren't being polled. You know, there's always that undercurrent. It's going to be a turnout election. But this could very well come down to just tens of thousands of votes in a handful of states like last time.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So love or hate the Electoral College, I mean, we're stuck with it again, and it might save us again. We'll see. But
well, and I'm also curious about, I don't know how much you've crunched the numbers. I got into this yesterday with Jonathan Martin just a little bit, you know, on the Senate. It looks pretty good right now that the Republicans might be able to gain control of the Senate. And the House is going to be, you know, very close. But let's say, I mean, you got a couple of interesting scenarios. One could be the Senate and the House to Republicans, and Harris is in the White House. That might be very interesting to see what she can accomplish with two, you know, both chambers being Republican. You could have Trump and you could run the table. You could have both be Republican and then Trump in the White House, which offers a whole another set of opportunities, I would say.
Oh, my goodness. Would Republicans go ahead and abolish the filibuster since the Democrats are promising to do it? Would Republicans just go ahead and do it and then pass some cool things. You know, that
I don't like that idea, having in the past. But then again, you know, if this is about winning and getting things done, I've changed my mind on a variety of things, as I know you have too. So we'll have to see, because I don't think there's any doubt. You know, I think I heard Carl Rove or Ari Fleischer say this, that, you know, she gave Dana Bash, she gave the country everything that they wanted to hear, the blah, blah, blah. But by saying, look, my values haven't changed, that's a little code to her supporters on the left saying, hey, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, don't worry, I got this. We're going to be radical. 100%. We just can't tell the country we're going to be radical.
100%. That's huge, and it has to be exposed. Did you see the Nicole Shanahan video that she did, that her team did? It was a Trump.
RFK's running mate, you mean?
Yes.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, you'll have to watch it. It's made like a drug commercial for Trump derangement syndrome. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. But I love seeing people like that, you know, just getting on the same team. It's like, I don't know, it's like some sort of a Marvel's movie or something. It's just incredible to see like RFK and his team and Tulsi Gabbard and just sane Democrats, even that we might disagree with on a lot of things.
You know, and I didn't ask you, I'm going to have Kyle, my producer today, we're going to find that audio right away and see if I can air it here in just a minute. But I didn't ask you about RFK Jr. And I don't know. I'm in the camp that doesn't think that that's going to have a major impact. But if we're talking about very narrow margins, and we are talking about very, very narrow margins, it could certainly play a role coming up.
Yeah. Yeah. You never know.
All right, Scott, well, listen, you got big plans for Labor Day weekend or not?
Not a whole lot. It is boiling hot, so maybe a cookout or something, but not a ton.
Where are you? Remind me, where are you?
East Tennessee.
Okay.
East Tennessee.
That's right. Yeah, it's been hot here the last couple of days, but we got rain and a little bit of a cooling trend, and, you know, final weekend at the pools might be in the 80s, not in the 90s, and that's not too bad. Have a great Labor Day. Enjoy the month of September. We'll probably hook up again before this election, see where we are, Scott.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
Scott Moorfield. And I think we have found the audio that he was referring to about Trump derangement syndrome. I'll use that for audio cut of the day coming up. It's
better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
My friend, Rick Niner, who grew up here in St. Louis, I visit him quite a bit in Las Vegas, and he splits a lot of time between L.A. and Vegas. He's going to a music festival called Fool in Love this weekend, which features Lionel Richie, Diana Ross, Al Green, Nile Rodgers and Sheik, Santana, and Chaka Khan. I've never seen Chaka Khan, but there's an opportunity for people in St. Louis to see Chaka Khan and some artists along those lines at a great festival, which is coming up in a couple of weeks, called Music at the Intersection. And Chris Hansen is the executive director of the Kranzberg Arts Foundation, joins us. We'll preview. I thought we'd talk a little music on a Friday heading into the holiday weekend. Chris, how are you?
I'm good, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Well, I was down seeing Pines Fest last weekend. My friend Neil Sosik putting on a great show with some other bands, and I saw all the posters for Music at the Intersection. I was aware of this festival, but since it's coming up, I thought we'd take an advantage of the opportunity on a Friday to talk about some of these acts, because you have a hell of a lineup, Chris.
Yeah, man, we're really excited. It's a big deal, and can't wait to celebrate St. Louis and all the great acts on September 14th and 15th. Down in the heart of the Grand Center Arts District. So, yeah, we're really excited, man.
How long have you been doing this particular festival now?
So this is the fourth year, and this is a real celebration of St. Louis's musical legacy. So our connection to jazz and blues and soul and rock and roll and how that music's informed modern-day music. So you're going to always see living legends, rising stars, and St. Louis giants. And we got some big ones this year, Chaka Khan celebrating her 50th anniversary, You know, Stanley Clark on the heels of last year's Herbie Hancock performance. And then, like, big contemporary acts like, you know, Black Pumas and Big Boy and St. Louis Giants like Chingy. So we just, yeah, I mean, this is a great event and something you can only experience in St. Louis.
I love Chingy. He's one of my favorites. I just like him as a person. I really do. Saturday, September 14th, your headliners are, let me play a little Black Pumas. Actually, I didn't pull any. Black Pumas, Big Boy, Lettuce. I did pull some Lettuce, Chris, because I was unfamiliar with this band. I kind of like the name. And is it just a bunch of horns? Do they even have a singer in this band, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they bring in vocals, but this is one of the great funk bands that's been touring the world for the last couple decades. I mean, this is Lettuce. If you're a music lover, you know Lettuce for just being a high quality, high caliber, you know, funk jazz ensemble. So I'm glad you're going to play something by Lettuce today. I think people really like it.
I don't know. Somehow that one got by me. Now, I do love this guy here, Trombone Shorty, and there's a bit of a St. Louis connection there because his guitar player, Pete Morano, is from here in the St. Louis area. But, man, if you've never seen Trombone Shorty, they put on a hell of a show.
That's right. And, you know, Pete, and absolutely. And then our connection to those river cities, right, in New Orleans, our music's been so informed by that music that came out of the Caribbean and the Delta. So Trombone, there's always an act on the bill that's got that New Orleans swing.
And here's one of my other favorites, and this is on the Sunday, September 15th with Chaka Khan and Trombone Shorty, Robert Randolph Band. Started seeing Robert Randolph, I don't know, 20, 22 years ago, and they just have always blown me away. Great live act. So you got an awesome lineup for both days. Now, the venues are how are the venues set up? Do you have some performances under the big top like Pines Fest last weekend?
Yeah, so the Big Top will be fully activated. We have a big main stage on Washington Avenue. We have another stage in a field one block off of Washington on Samuel Shepard. And then we've got our fourth stage embedded in an alleyway in our mural walk. So this is every stage has a different experience. The Wash Ave stage has got a block party energy. The tent is this majestic tent, so it's got that jazz tent feel. Then you're in a big field like a traditional festival. And then you're also just immersed in what Forbes magazine called America's Most Exciting Arts District. So, you know, there's public murals, there's vendors all over the place selling, you know, amazing St. Louis products, dozens of food trucks, making our best cuisine, lots of family-friendly activities. It's a free for kids under 12, so there's no reason not to pack them all up and come down. You can go in and out all day long, so you're not trapped in the footprint. You can come early, leave, and go walk around and visit some of America's most important museums. Go visit all the great architecture down in Grand Center. So there's really no excuse not to come down. It's a wonderful, safe environment. It's right there where the Fox Theater and the Symphony, right at the intersection of Grand and Washington, just a little bit to the west of or east of Grand. Sorry. So easy parking, easy entrance, lots of food, lots of activities, and there's not a bad note played all weekend. Every single note is going to be something hot and something that everyone's going to love.
I love it. Musicattheintersection.org. Shamefully, I had never seen anything under the big top, and then I had Neil on the show last week, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to take my daughter down to Pines Fest, and we saw the Mighty Pines under the big top, and that was a great feel for, Sue was asking me.
I thought
it was spectacular. It really worked well as a venue.
Well, I appreciate that, and you know, it's one of the Kranzberg Arts Foundation venues, and you can see Circus Flora there every year.
Yeah.
You can come down. We do concerts and festivals. Really great, majestic space. Again, only something you can experience if you come to St. Louis, right? The majestic tent, the beautiful arts district, and a festival that's really rooted in St. Louis's imprint on the American Songbook and something that celebrates our culture and our legacy and our contributions, to the global stage. And, it's an event that has been acclaimed by so many major magazines, one of the top 20 festivals in the nation, Billboard Magazine, Essence Magazine, on and on and on. It's a nationally acclaimed thing, and it's all for us. It's St. Louis. The people there are a beautiful tapestry of what St. Louis really looks like. It's 100% locally produced, so everybody working is from St. Louis, and the majority of the acts on the stage live in St. Louis or are from St. Louis. So some of the biggest stars that have ever blessed our stage grew up here and have went on to do amazing things. So it's a real celebration of us And, you know, we're really excited to be able to bring this to St. Louis year over year.
Well, Chris, you are a great ambassador, and you're very enthusiastic. And I will just say, just as someone who, you know, I've been to a fair amount of music festivals over the years, and I follow, you know, the lineups, I think this is one hell of a gem of a festival for St. Louis. Your lineup this year is really mind-blowing. So congratulations on that.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Take care. It's September 14th and 15th. Go to musicattheintersection.org. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, sir.
All right, take care. Yeah, it's a good festival. You know, I'm not, here's what I would say about music festivals. I don't like big, giant music festivals. I've never been to Lollapalooza. I went to Life is Beautiful in Vegas, which was pretty significant. That one's died now. They're doing something different. But this is one that you can kind of get your arms around.
It sounds like it.
Because it's a very unique setting. And, Sue, I was really impressed with how it felt like. If you're under that big top, they have the whole floor that's basically cleared out. They have the, you know, the soundboard is in the middle. But then there's the regular seating on the bleachers right behind that, and there's no bad seat in that entire big
top. Oh, that's cool.
So it felt cool, like a cool music venue, but what they put together here, and you know, you're going to see really big name acts in front of not ginormous crowds, very manageable crowds. So they got Black Pumas, Big Boy, Lettuce, and Chingy on the 14th would be the headliners. Chaka Khan, Trombone Shorty. You know, I played the other Chaka Khan song, but you got to have this, right?
Yes.
Chaka Khan. Have you ever seen her?
No. Chaka Khan. Oh, I would love to.
I know. Well, you weren't in here when I was talking about Rick is going this weekend because they have a festival in Los Angeles, and this one sounds pretty good too. They announced it in February, and it's called Fool in Love. So it's Lionel Richie, Diana Ross, Nile Rodgers and Chic, Al Green, Santana, Charlie Wilson, Gladys Knight, the Isley Brothers, Chaka Khan, Eric Burdon from the Animals, the OJs, the Jacksons. I'd love to know who's in the Jacksons these days.
Yeah,
War.
Good question.
The Spinners. We just had
Spinners
reference.
Oh, this is fantastic.
The Whispers, the Emotions, and Dionne Warwick. And that's just one day. Then they have Smokey Robinson and Duran Jones in the Indications. George Clinton's there, Cool in the Gang. There's a bunch at that festival. But I would say that this festival, Music at the Intersection, is a little bit of a smaller version of what they're doing with that.
It sounds like, wow, that's really cool.
I would say, you know, I've kind of made this rule where I'm not seeing people in their 70s anymore, rock acts. But there's a bunch. I'd love to go see Stanley Clarke. You know, he mentioned Herbie Hancock. I really have never seen Herbie Hancock. He was a big part of my musical foundation in the 80s, as was Stanley Clarke. I don't get super into jazz, but there's you know, some foundational things there that I have great appreciation for. So I would certainly break my rule to see some of these artists here in a couple of weeks. And I use Trombone Shorty quite a bit as bumper music. And I always get the fans and the people listening to the show sometimes notice that one. And I interviewed Pete Morano. I used to do these things at KMOX called KMOX Profile. And I realized Pete's brother is in Neil's band, the Mighty Pines. And when I realized that I think I was seeing him at some point in Columbia, Missouri at a Roots and Blues music festival, they gave kind of a St. Louis shout out because of Pete. And I interviewed him and, you know, he's just a solid rock guitarist in a really cool band with this guy named Trombone Shorty that just smokes you.
That's
just
really
so
cool.
Good. So check it out. We'll go out with a little Chaka Khan here. I still have audio cut of the day. We did locate the Trump derangement syndrome Nicole Shanahan ad that she put out on Twitter. It is good. Scott Moorfield was right. That's coming up for Audio Cut of the Day. Kind of real. We do our best, ladies and gentlemen. We really do as we take into the weekend here. I do have a fantastic Audio Cut of the Day coming up because Scott Moorfield mentioned the Nicole Shanahan ad. I had to go online to her Twitter, and it is very funny. So we'll get to that here in just a couple of minutes. I did want to mention a couple of things. I got a couple of stories that I did not get to yet, Sue, on the show. We had a great time during the roundtable. You can always use the Rewind app and go back to that a little bit earlier. Jane was hanging out in the 4 o'clock hour. We had Paul Hall on entertainment. He talked a little bit about Reagan, which is the new Dennis Quaid movie. You know, Christian Toto is a good friend. He's a fellow movie critic. He's out in Denver. He does a blog called HollywoodandToto.com, and he released his review of this, and he said that he liked it quite a bit. So, and as I mentioned about Christian before, he's like one of the only, it was Michael Medved, me, and Christian Toto, the only three conservative critics in the entire country. And Sue, that is really not an exaggeration. You know, I spent a lot of time in Hollywood with fellow critics, and not to say that they're all whacked out, nut jobs politically, but even... Do you remember Joe Williams, who was at the Post-Dispatch?
I do.
You know, what's funny about Joe, I love Joe. I really did. I considered him a friend. We were not extremely close, but we had, I think, mutual respect when it came to films. And the funny thing about Joe is, like, we could not have been further apart. And by the way, I think the gap would have widened in the Trump era because he passed away.
Sure.
He had a terrible car accident. He was on his way to a drive-in years ago. This might go back 10 years. And that was so sad because no matter what I thought of Joe's politics, and unfortunately some of that bled into his criticism of movies sometimes, he was good at what he did. And he had a, he was just a pro. That's what I'd say. And there's not a lot of those that are out there. And it's a bit of a dying industry, you know, being a, what I would say is a respectable movie critic, someone who really puts a lot of effort into it
and writes
thorough.
Well.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And that, I was cut, my teeth were cut with Ebert, Siskel and Ebert during the late 70s when I still lived in Chicago before their show went national. And I saw those guys reviewing movies and it would be like my Sunday thing. Even as a kid, I had to watch Siskel and Ebert.
Oh, that's
and that was
cute.
Where I wanted, you know, there were several things that I wanted to do at that time. I wanted to be a disc jockey and I wanted to be someone that reviewed movies. And lo and behold, I actually did both eventually and became a critic in, I think it was 1988. I finally asked someone at the radio station that I was working at, say, hey, can I review movies? And I just started doing it and kind of took off from there. I don't know if I've ever told you what I first did. I think I have mentioned this, but you couldn't see the films in advance in Columbia, Missouri. So
why?
I went, there was, well, because they didn't do screenings. They would do it here and they really wouldn't even do them in Kansas City. So on big movies, like I remember one time I came to St. Louis to see Dances with Wolves. And in that screening, I wasn't even supposed to be in there because they do what they call exhibitor screenings. They'll do a screening for people who own the theaters and run the theaters.
Sure.
And you know, to get them excited about the films that are coming out. I ended up accidentally getting invited to that. But I lived in Columbia at the time, so I would have to drive here. But I went to the Form 8 theaters in Columbia, got to know the manager there, and said, hey, is there any way... Because the guy in Columbia at the Tribune reviewed movies, but his movie reviews didn't. So the movie opens today. Reagan opens today. His review of that would be Sunday, but not Sunday in 2 days, Sunday in 10 days.
Oh, well, that's no good.
Well, no, because they weren't doing screening. So I go to the guy at the Form 8 Theater and I say, hey, is there any way that I can see these movies ahead of time? And he said, sure. If you want to come on Thursdays when the prints arrive, this is all big FedEx, UPS packages of reels of movies. He says, we got to loop them up and we got to go through one time with the trailers to make sure that they're going to play appropriately when they open. And this was when they weren't doing Thursday night openings and the movie, like if a movie opens on Friday back then, it wouldn't
open
until
Friday.
And it was 4 o'clock on Friday. It wasn't like 10 in the morning. If you will. But he let me sit in on the, sometimes I'd sit there on a Thursday after I did my radio show and I'd watch two movies. I'd go over to the ABC affiliate KMIZ where I reviewed. I'd edit a little package together and put it on the air. Remarkably, I was even paid for that back in the day.
That is, you know what?
Know.
That might be the most remarkable part of that story.
$50 a hit. I was making $200. That wasn't too bad in 1987.
It's pretty darn good.
It was my car payment back then. My car payment was $214, and that paid for my car.
Love it.
Let's do this here before we leave on a holiday weekend.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
All right, before I get to Nicole Shanahan, let me play a little bit of what happened last night. And it just was not very good, but she's going to get a passing grade because we're grading on the curve, apparently. This is Kamala.
If you are elected, what would you do on day one in the White House?
Well, there are a number of things. I will tell you, first and foremost, one of my highest priorities is to do what we can to support and strengthen the middle class. When I look at...
Now, she just goes on and on here, and she really doesn't even answer the question.
There's no... What does that mean? How?
It's ridiculous. Here she is on the border.
I believe there should be consequence. We have laws that have to be followed and enforced that address and deal with people who cross our border illegally, and there should be consequence. And let's be clear, in this race, I'm the only person who has prosecuted transnational criminal organizations.
She brought that up a couple
Are
of different
you
times
me?
As a prosecutor, right? Let's be clear. First off, those were the two trigger words last night, or the phrases. Let's be clear, or first off, here's another one here.
Deserve, which is a new way forward and turn the page on the last decade of what I believe has been contrary to where the spirit of our country really lies.
But the last decade, of course, the last 3.5 years has been part of your administration.
I'm talking about an era.
Okay, an era.
What?
Yeah. How about 16 out of the 20 years, if you're elected, will be Democrat control.
Yep.
But then we thought, because Scott brought this up, I went to Nicole Shanahan, that was the running mate of RFK Jr., and they put a great parody ad together. Here it is.
Are you or your loved ones suffering from illnesses such as TDS, also known as Trump derangement syndrome? Do you dismiss or deny the current issues facing our country, such as historic inflation, illegal immigration, corporate corruption, World War III escalations, and the chronic disease epidemic? Are you willing to elect someone who was the least popular vice president in modern history and who offers no policy or vision for America simply because your brain keeps telling you anyone but Trump? If so, you might be struggling from TDS.
Yeah, if those fit your situation, or maybe a family member, it's a holiday weekend, maybe you're going to see them at a barbecue, offer them some help.
Introducing independence. Independence allows you the freedom to finally think independently once again. Instead of believing everything you hear from the mainstream media, independence allows for constructive critical thinking.
I used to hear people on the news say things like,
Donald Trump and the movement he has encouraged are a threat to democracy.
Oh, yeah,
and I instantly believed it. With independence, I now realize the media is run by the Democrat elite, who are a corrupt oligarchy that censors free speech.
Well, they're not wrong about that, right?
Silences political opponents, supports forever wars, and abandons democracy by anointing its candidates.
Independence may not be for everyone. If you enjoy being lied to about your president's cognitive abilities, support Orwellian totalitarianism, or are excited about communist fiscal policy, independence may not be right for you. Common side effects of independence may include an awakening of rational thought, successfully identifying propaganda, freedom of choice, loss of hatred, anti-narcissistic behavior, and love of democracy.
I used to blindly hate whoever my party was running against. I didn't care about facts or policy because I was hopelessly indoctrinated. With independence, I'm much more interested in policies that uphold democracy, and I truly care about the health of our country and its citizens.
Ask your doctor if independence is right for you, and enjoy your freedoms once again.
I love that. And anything that is really sharp satirically like that, the woman's voice was just perfect. She sounds like exactly the same people who do the drug ads. But man, that was really in focus and sharp, and I like that quite a bit. And I'm glad that Scott brought it up. So there you go. That's our audio cut of the day here on this Friday as we take you to the holiday. Sue, I know you have your brother in town, so have a great time.
Thank
with
you.
Jeff. Tell him that I said hello.
Will do.
Have fun at Achero tomorrow night.
Yum.
Say hi to my Parkway West classmate, Jimmy Fiala. If he's there.
Will do.
And have a great weekend, everyone. We'll talk on Tuesday. We had a best of show on Monday afternoon. Kind of real. We do our best, ladies and gentlemen. We really do, as we take into the weekend here. I do have a fantastic audio cut of the day coming up because Scott Moorfield mentioned the Nicole Shanahan ad. I had to go online to her Twitter, and it is very funny. So we'll get to that here in just a couple of minutes. I did want to mention a couple of things. I got a couple of stories that I did not get to yet, Sue, on the show. We had a great time during the roundtable. You can always use the Rewind app and go back to that a little bit earlier. Jane was hanging out in the 4 o'clock hour. We had Paul Hall on entertainment. He talked a little bit about Reagan, which is the new Dennis Quaid movie. You know, Christian Toto is a good friend. He's a fellow movie critic. He's out in Denver. He does a blog called HollywoodandToto.com, and he released his review of this, and he said that he liked it quite a bit. So, and as I mentioned about Christian before, he's like one of the only, it was Michael Medved, me, and Christian Toto, the only three conservative critics in the entire country. And Sue, that is really not an exaggeration. You know, I spent a lot of time in Hollywood with fellow critics, and not to say that they're all whacked out, nut jobs politically, but even, do you remember Joe Williams, who was at the Post-Dispatch?
I do.
You know, it's funny about Joe. I love Joe. I really did. I considered him a friend. We were not extremely close, but we had, I think, mutual respect when it came to films. And the funny thing about Joe is, like, we could not have been further apart. And by the way, I think the gap would have widened in the Trump era because he passed away.
Sure.
He had a terrible car accident. He was on his way to a drive-in years ago. This might go back 10 years. And that was so sad because no matter what I thought of Joe's politics, and unfortunately some of that bled into his criticism of movies sometimes, he was good at what he did. And he had a, he was just a pro. That's what I'd say. And there's not a lot of those that are out there. And it's a bit of a dying industry, you know, being a, what I would say is a respectable movie critic, someone who really puts a lot of effort into it
and writes well.
Right, yeah. Right. And that, I, you know, I was cut, my teeth were cut with Ebert, Siskel and Ebert during the late 70s when I still lived in Chicago before their show went national. And I saw those guys reviewing movies, and it would be like my Sunday thing. Even as a kid, I had to watch Siskel and Ebert.
Oh, that's
and that was
cute.
Where I wanted, you know, there were several things that I wanted to do at that time. I wanted to be a disc jockey, and I wanted to be someone that reviewed movies. And lo and behold, I actually did both eventually and became a critic in, I think it was 1988. I finally asked someone at the radio station that I was working at, say, hey, can I review movies? And I just started doing it and kind of took off from there. I don't know if I've ever told you what I first did. I think I have mentioned this, but you couldn't see the films in advance in Columbia, Missouri. So
why?
I went, there was, well, because they didn't do screenings. Small, they would do it here, and they really wouldn't even do them in Kansas City. So on big movies, like I remember one time I came to St. Louis to see Dances with Wolves. And in that screening, I wasn't even supposed to be in there because they do what they call exhibitor screenings. They'll do a screening for people who own the theaters and run the theaters.
Sure.
And you know, to get them excited about the films that are coming out. I ended up accidentally getting invited to that. But I lived in Columbia at the time, so I would have to drive here. But I went to the Form 8 theaters in Columbia, got to know the manager there, and said, hey, is there any way... Because the guy in Columbia at the Tribune reviewed movies, but his movie reviews didn't... So the movie opens today. Reagan opens today. His review of that would be Sunday, but not Sunday in 2 days, Sunday in 10 days.
Oh, well, that's no good.
Well, no, because they weren't doing screening. So I go to the guy at the Form 8 Theater, and I say, hey, is there any way that I can see these movies ahead of time? And he said, sure. If you want to come on Thursdays when the prints arrive, this is all big FedEx,
wow.
UPS packages
wow.
of reels of movies. He says, we got to loop them up, and we got to go through one time with the trailers to make sure that they're going to play appropriately when they open. And this was when they weren't doing Thursday night openings, and the movie, like, if a movie opens on Friday back then, it was 4 o'clock on Friday. It wasn't like 10 in the morning. If you will. But he let me sit in on the, sometimes I'd sit there on a Thursday after I did my radio show and I'd watch two movies. I'd go over to the ABC affiliate KMIZ where I reviewed. I'd edit a little package together and put it on the air. Remarkably, I was even paid for that back in the day.
That is, you know what? That might be the most remarkable part of that story.
$50 a hit. I was making $200. That wasn't too bad in 1987.
It's pretty darn good.
It was my car payment back then. My car payment was $214, and that paid for my car.
Love it.
Let's do this here before we leave on a holiday weekend.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
All right, before I get to Nicole Shanahan, let me play a little bit of what happened last night. And it just was not very good, but she's going to get a passing grade because we're grading on the curve, apparently. This is Kamala.
If you are elected, what would you do on day one in the White House?
Well, there are a number of things. I will tell you, first and foremost, one of my highest priorities is to do what we can to support and strengthen the middle class. When I look at...
Now, she just goes on and on here, and she really doesn't even answer the question.
There's no... What does that mean? How?
It's ridiculous. Here she is on the border.
I believe there should be consequence. We have laws that have to be followed and enforced that address and deal with people who cross our border illegally, and there should be consequence. And let's be clear, in this race, I'm the only person who has prosecuted transnational criminal organizations.
She brought that up a couple
Are
of different
you kidding
times
me?
As a prosecutor, right? Let's be clear. First off, those were the two trigger words last night, or the phrases. Let's be clear, or first off, here's another one here.
Deserve, which is a new way forward and turn the page on the last decade of what I believe has been contrary to where the spirit of our country really lies.
But the last decade, of course, the last 3.5 years, has been part of your administration.
I'm talking about an era.
Okay, an era.
What?
Yeah. How about 16 out of the 20 years, if you're elected, will be Democrat control?
Yep.
But then we thought, because Scott brought this up, I went to Nicole Shanahan, that was the running mate of RFK Jr., and they put a great parody ad together. Here it is.
Are you or your loved ones suffering from illnesses such as TDS, also known as Trump derangement syndrome? Do you dismiss or deny the current issues facing our country, such as historic inflation, illegal immigration, corporate corruption, World War III escalations, and the chronic disease epidemic? Are you willing to elect someone who was the least popular vice president in modern history and who offers no policy or vision for America simply because your brain keeps telling you anyone but Trump? If so, you might be struggling from TDS.
Yeah, if those fit your situation, or maybe a family member, it's a holiday weekend, maybe you're going to see them at a barbecue, offer them some help.
Introducing Independence. Independence allows you the freedom to finally think independently once again. Instead of believing everything you hear from the mainstream media, independence allows for constructive critical thinking.
I used to hear people on the news say things like,
Donald Trump and the movement he has encouraged are a threat to democracy.
Oh, yeah,
and I instantly believed it. With independence, I now realize the media is run by the Democrat elite, who are a corrupt oligarchy that censors free speech.
Well, they're not wrong about that, right?
Silences political opponents, supports forever wars, and abandons democracy by anointing its candidates.
Independence may not be for everyone. If you enjoy being lied to about your president's cognitive abilities, support Orwellian totalitarianism, or are excited about communist fiscal policy, independence may not be right for you. Common side effects of independence may include an awakening of rational thought, successfully identifying propaganda, freedom of choice, loss of hatred, anti-narcissistic behavior, and love of democracy.
I used to blindly hate whoever my party was running against. I didn't care about facts or policy because I was hopelessly indoctrinated. With independence, I'm much more interested in policies that uphold democracy, and I truly care about the health of our country and its citizens.
Ask your doctor if independence is right for you, and enjoy your freedoms once again.
I love that. And anything that is really sharp satirically like that, the woman's voice was just perfect. She sounds like exactly the same people who do the drug ads. But, man, that was really in focus and sharp, and I like that quite a bit. And I'm glad that Scott brought it up. So there you go. That's our audio cut of the day here on this Friday as we take you to the holiday. Sue, I know you have your brother in town, so have a great time
with
Jeff. Tell him that I said hello.
Will do.
Have fun at Achero tomorrow night.
Yum.
Say hi to my Parkway West classmate, Jimmy Fiala, if he's there.
Will do.
And have a great weekend, everyone. We'll talk on Tuesday. We've got a Best of show on Monday afternoon.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.